Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the big end of year show, the end of year extravaganza, so to speak. I think we should call it something like finally 2025 is over, or my God, I thought it would never end, or something like that. I don't know. I'm just kidding. 2025 wasn't a bad year, I don't think. We'll find out from the Flannel Panel what they think. We like to close the year with the Flannel Panel. Chris Check, president of Flannel Panel. He is the president of Flannel Panel. But what I meant to say is president of Catholic Answers, and Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. This is my first time in the new studio.
Yeah.
The new design.
What do you think?
I love it.
Yeah, it looks good. Edgar did it.
And I also am very happy that it's no longer an OSHA hazard to walk inside the studio.
It's amazing. You can walk straight to your seat without having to fight your way through cables.
Or risk dying, tripping over something.
How's it look on screen, Joe? How do we look?
It looks great. It's nice and open. You can see it. Fulton Sheen.
Yep, there's Fulton Sheen.
There's the Pieta.
Did you hear the thing about Fulton Sheen? Did you say this on the air already?
No, what happened with Fulton Sheen?
The day that we debuted that we debuted the new studio is the anniversary of his death.
Yeah, and we've got him prominently
there. Who even knew that? God knew.
And Fulton knew.
Yes.
But we didn't know. So the first day we featured him was the anniversary of his death, December 9th. All right. I sent you guys usually what we've done. We've polled our listeners, and we've asked them what were the big stories of the year. But frankly, that was a lot of work, and I found an easier way to do it. I just asked ChatGPT what were the big stories of the year. I said, what were the big Catholic stories of the year, and what were the big secular stories of the year? And so,
are you saying AI is replacing our listeners?
We were worried
replacing everything.
That it would replace the host, yes. But it's just going to replace the audience now. We've moved on from it, from the audience. We're just doing this for the AI now. And then Luke looked at my stories. Luke Bender, who came to Catholic Answers this year, our YouTube genius. He looked at my stories and he saw a theme, and I thought it was a pretty good theme that he picked up. He said Catholics won the internet. Did I get that theme right, Luke? Is that Catholics won the internet in 2025? What do you guys think of that theme for the theme for the year?
I think we should explore it. Well, I think it'll be good. It'll be good to explore.
Okay, so you're not quite sure that that's true, I can see.
I mean,
what
does it mean to win the internet?
Yeah, win.
We'll see.
Wait, what does it mean to win the internet? That seems quite clear to me. The internet is a giant contest for eyeballs and earballs, and we won. The Catholics won this year.
Fair enough.
Is that true?
Let's see how that thesis holds up over 2 hours.
All right, first of all, we have a new patron saint of the internet in the Catholic Church, Carlo. Acutis or Acutis? I'm not sure how you're supposed to say his Italian last name.
Everyone says Acutis, so I think we should go with that.
By the way, if I tell my phone to remember something, because I wanted to tell my phone, remind me to talk about Carlo Acutis on the show, it turns it into Acutie. That's what I'm supposed to talk about. Carlo Acutie. So apparently I am very attracted to a man named Carlo. But Carlo Acutis.
Quick note for Luke. Can you clip just that part?
Oh, my gosh. No. Because then don't do that, because then I will guard myself, and that will, if I become guarded,
and the show will no longer be entertaining.
It'll no longer be.
That's true. You be out and proud about this.
By the way, a lot. Joe, a lot of people are catching us for the first time because you're on the road, maybe, or you're off work on a day you haven't. If you want to know about us, you can find us at Catholic.com, and you should come on a cruise with us. We're going on a cruise from Amsterdam to Basel in just a few months, starting on May
3rd. Just a few rooms left.
Just a few. Oh, you can get those last rooms for our
final
panel. At the
nice people discount.
And get the nice people discount. Call us. Get the nice people discount, or visit CatholicCruise.com to come with us. But Flannel Panel, we'll all be there. All right, let me give you the evidence that Catholics won the internet this year. Okay, you guys ready for the evidence?
Ready for it.
That the big story of the year, the big theme of the year, according to Luke Bender, who is plugged into the internet,
Literally, actually, he is a machine.
he's a bot. Yes.
He's a bot plugged into the internet. Item number. Well, Carlo Acutis was the first sign that we won the internet this year. Matt Frad joined the Daily Wire. That's serious? Yes, I was serious about that one.
Okay.
What were you aware that Matt Frad joined the Daily Wire and how important this is to the people of
Earth? Someone told me that he did.
Were you aware?
I have never seen an episode of the Daily Wire.
Oh, have you ever? Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I mean, think about what we do here. Of just, you get people who hopefully have interesting takes on things. You put them in a room together. You ask them for their thoughts about current events. I think that's a Daily Wire.
So the Daily Wire is a TV show.
Yeah, it's a TV show.
It's more of a consortium of different internet personalities.
It's a media company, is what it is.
Right.
But it's primarily based in, it started in podcasting and has moved into other things like making documentaries and all that kind of stuff. But it's a media juggernaut.
Is this the thing that has Candace Owens on it, or Candace Williams, or Candace, what's her name?
Candace Owens was at Daily Wire. They had something of a falling out.
I see.
Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh,
Michael Knowles. Okay.
All of those people. In fact, actually, this is sort of Candace adjacent news. One of the major controversies over, our friend Matt Frad joining the Daily Wire is that on the one hand, he has a much wider audience. And here I actually think of Fulton Sheen, where Fulton Sheen makes his transition from radio, where he's doing a very Catholic thing on the radio, to his Life is Worth Living TV show, where he's reaching a broader audience. But kind of as a result, you see him diversifying his topics a little bit, where he covers some things of more general interest, you know, the dangers of communism, in a way that a Protestant or a Jewish person watching would resonate with. And so his audience like explodes in size, but becomes a lot of non-Catholics as well. And he regularly commented on this. He estimated that Catholics were like his third largest demographic in terms of the show. And so with Matt Frad moving over to the Daily Wire, you have this same much larger audience kind of at his fingertips now. But you have people who are worried that, you know, with, you know, Ben Shapiro is Jewish, he's not Christian at all. Is this going to mean that he kind of waters down the Catholicism? That's what a lot of people were worried about. And some of them maybe expressed that in a less than charitable way. For my own part, I don't see that happening. I mean, I'm sure he will continue to take things that are both distinctly Catholic and things that are maybe of a more broad-reaching approach. But I think that's a totally healthy thing to do, that there are areas where we have common ground, where there are areas where people of goodwill who aren't Catholic will say, yeah, that makes sense. We agree. We're on board with that. And that kind of thing builds up the goodwill that people want to hear you out when you're saying the distinctly Catholic thing. You know, our colleague Trent Horn, I think, does this extremely well, where he covers all sorts of topics you don't have to be Catholic to agree with him on. And that makes you hopefully more likely to trust him and listen to him when he says, oh, and by the way, here's why we as Catholics believe X or Y.
You had a point you wanted to make. So
I wanted to say that Fulton Sheen beat out Milton Berle.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But Milton Berle had the best line
Milton
ever.
Milton Berle line, yeah.
But he had better writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's what Milton Berle said.
Yeah,
but is there a? It seems to me some Catholics would be happier with their Catholicism. Maybe this is too mean to say it this way. If it would be just in a Catholic ghetto, that if you wouldn't take it out, like I feel like Matt Frad. I don't know Matt. I'm not like super up on anybody's media. I can't even remember what we do here from one day to the next a lot of the time. But that's why we have Darren. Darren remembers everything that we do. I can't. But he'll be like, yeah, you interviewed that guy like 2 weeks ago. I'll be like, oh, really? That's the same guy. But I'm not saying I'm a big media person, but it seems to me just on its face a good thing when a Catholic is so successful that a secular media company says, yeah, let's bring him in and mine his content a little bit.
So it sounds to me like this Daily Wire, there was almost entirely staffed now by Catholics. Knowles is a Catholic, right? Walsh, these guys are Catholics?
Knowles and Walsh are both Catholics. We've had Michael Knowles on the show.
Yeah, and Frad. Frad's a Catholic.
Frad's a Catholic.
Yes,
that's what they say.
He's a good man, yeah. I think this is very good news. Are they going to tell Ben Shapiro he should get baptized?
I don't know.
It's probably fair to say that will happen. I think I saw something where Matt Frad already announced to them that they're all under the jurisdiction of the Pope. I don't see him pulling his punches.
Let's just unpack that for a minute, because Matt Frad is playing around there a little bit.
Yeah, halfway.
What do you mean halfway? Is the Daily Wire under the authority of the Pope?
Like, the whole world is properly under the authority of the Pope as a vicar of Christ the King.
Sure, yeah.
And I think he knows that. I think he's being a little bit playful about just how Catholic the organization's becoming. But I think if you pressed him and said, is there a sense that we can affirm, you know, the spiritual authority of the Pope?
Let's take the Christ the King thing there for a minute, because I do think that's important. Christ is King. He's the ruler. This whole universe belongs to him. So he's the proper. Yep. But he clearly, if we take the scriptural view of it, he has delegated the governance of things to other people. So, like, the Pope is not the ruler of the world in the sense of being a temporal ruler. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I want to be careful to unpack this properly.
There is properly a distinction between the spiritual / ecclesiastical authority and the temporal authority. But there's also a relationship between them. This is an issue of a great deal of theological work, you know, throughout the centuries of the church. You've got things like the two swords doctrine, et cetera, where, you know, Leo the 13th talks about all of this. Like, there is a relationship in which there is no such thing as a purely secular power if all power ultimately comes from God. And when Jesus speaks to Pilate, he says you would have no authority if it had not come to you from on high. So even the non-Christian kings of the world derive their power in the ultimate sense from God. The more authority recognizes that and gives honor where it is due to the one who gives them the authority that they have, the healthier and more authentic the state becomes. Like, a state that denies its authority is ultimately derived from God is denying the foundation of the state.
Is it since John the 23rd that the Holy Father has not worn the triple tiara, or Paul the Sixth?
I believe it was Paul the Sixth gave it to the UN.
Yeah. So, but the triple tiara, one of those crowns represents King of the World.
Yes, but because each of you said something very interesting in response to this. Chris's question was, are they going to tell Ben Shapiro he needs to get baptized?
Yes.
And Joe,
I hope they do.
And Joe referenced.
And if they don't, Ben, you need to get baptized.
But Joe referenced the fact that they're all under the Pope. But both of those require considerable nuance to unpack them.
That's true.
That we can say these things jokingly in one sense, but I think we do owe it to people to unpack them properly, because there is a crazy kind of Catholic triumphalism that's out there now running around. It does tend towards the anti-Semitic, this Catholic triumphalism.
Isn't that phrase "Christ is King" sort of loaded with that?
A lot of people use it in a way to sort of.
It's a kind of a code.
No, but what I'm saying is a disordered Catholic triumphalism.
I think Chris is saying disordered as well.
That's what I'm talking about.
Code in a good way.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and unpack all of that and continue with our. Did the Catholics win the internet this year, 2025? Catholic Answers Live, flannel panel, end of the year extravaganza continues right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1983. Mother Angelica Live debuts on EWTN's second anniversary. Thanks to her rising profile, the guest roster for the shows includes Pat Boone, Chuck Colson, Betty Hutton, and others.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. We're reviewing the year 2025, preparing for the year 2026. So this is our big end of year extravaganza. And I organized the stories into the big Catholic stories and the big secular stories of the year. We will get to all of them, a whole bunch of stories to cover for the year, as everybody does their year in review. But we think we got a special angle on it that is looking at what we do every day, every time we meet as the flannel panel. I shouldn't say every day, but every time we're together as the flannel panel, we look at the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. So we're looking at the year's news from a Catholic perspective today. And one of the things that Bender, when he looked at the stories that I had gathered, he says, looks like Catholics won the internet this year. So our first big thing is, did Catholics win the internet? And my two pieces of evidence thus far, I have not presented my entire case, but my two pieces of evidence thus far is we have a new saint in charge of the internet, Carlo Acutis. And what, by the way, what a horrible job. I would like to be, like, if I'm a saint, I would like to be the saint in charge of parties, or, you know, maybe in charge of, like, I don't know, hot dishes. But to be the saint in charge of the internet, what a horrible job Carlo Acutis has gotten for himself. Second piece of evidence, Matt Frad joined the Daily Wire, which generated some responses from you are underwhelmed with that as an important story, Chris Check.
I just don't know. So I am thinking about this now. When I cared about, so the Daily Wire is a political, cultural source of commentary. Is that right?
I would say that is a perfect description. Okay, that seems
right.
to me
yes.
a perfect description.
So when I was the age of the people who are watching the Daily Wire now,
yes,
I read...
Just for context, you're someone who used the term Milton Berle and expected everyone to know who you meant and then asked what the Daily Wire was. So
okay.
If listeners are wondering where your cultural tastes lie.
All right. I was actually, I never saw a live episode of the Fulton Sheen Show. I was born in 1966. When was that show broadcast? It was before
that. It was certainly in the 50s.
It was before that.
Yeah, he was done by the 60s. Yeah. I mean, as far as that show goes.
In any case, when I was the age of the people who, so I'm gathering this, that the Daily Wire is a substantially influential media outlet in what we'll just very broadly call the conservative movement. Is that? Or
I think all of this.
Do people
is
start use that? Do they use that expression anymore? Conservative movement.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of describing.
Okay, so
that.
When I was the age of the people who watched Daily Wire, I read magazines.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah, you had to read magazines to know what was going on.
What are those?
Did you watch the Sunday news shows?
No, I mean, I did watch Firing Line.
Firing Line was big,
McLaughlin Group, or McLaughlin and Company, McLaughlin Group.
McLaughlin Group,
The former Jesuit. Pat Buchanan got his start on there. And then in the early days of CNN, Pat Buchanan and Michael Kinsley did Crossfire.
Right.
And Kinsley was a lib, but
They were too intelligent.
He was an intelligent
people.
Man.
That was probably the closest thing to what, from our era, that you could associate with.
But
the Daily Wire.
I think I'm a bad person to ask about this because one of the reasons I love being, and I used to work in this world when I was at the Rockford Institute. This is what I was heavily involved in conservative movement, politics, or culture.
Right.
And I'm very happy to be a Catholic Answers now.
Yeah, there is that's the question. Like, if Matt Frad is moving from talking about Jesus to talking about
he went in the opposite direction that I did.
That seems to me he's chosen to move from the higher things to the lower.
No, I'm very happy a Catholic of Matt's personal holiness and talent and knowledge now is going to have this audience because look, if it's true, it belongs to us, right? Isn't that what Justin Martyr said?
Was it Justin Martyr that said that?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a good one.
It
belongs to the church.
Yeah, if it's true, it belongs to us. Well, so Matt is going to be able to take the fullness of truth and apply it.
Yeah, right.
And that's great news.
Right. All right. Okay, so I do want to go back.
But I still prefer magazines.
I know you do, Chris. I don't know what to say about that. That ship has sailed. I think
Catholic Answers no longer has a magazine. I lost that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Because print is very, very expensive. Mail is very, very expensive. And electrons are amazingly cheap.
But the problem with electron is there's too many of
them. They're kind of negative.
very good. There's too many electrons.
That's right. I mean, God made the right amount of electrons, but I see what you mean, that there is this capacity problem that we have over capacity in our news business.
Yeah.
And so they end up so many stupid things because, but there was a pretty good number of stupid things when we were young.
I think that if Matt and the other Matt and who's the third one? Knowles.
Matt Walsh, Michael Knowles.
Michael Knowles, yeah. I think if they can bring
Ben Shapiro
into the church, that would be magnificent.
Okay, but let me ask you this. How do you feel about working with Jews in the public sphere?
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think sometimes that there's this, like you said, well, they should tell Matt Frad that he should get baptized. Well,
I'm concerned about
a salvation. Person.
Well, I didn't know.
Yeah, even if you're concerned about a salvation,
Ben, let's go get a beer. And then after they have a beer, he says, you know, you ought to get baptized.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So not the first thing.
No, but we don't give up evangelization, right? I'm not against evangelization.
If memory serves, there's a book out recently.
Yes,
How to Talk About Jesus with Ben Shapiro.
That's right. Ben Shapiro's in there. We did not use Ben Shapiro as an example.
He would fit under that category, anyone.
But I would think Ben Shapiro, if you said, I'm a Catholic and I want to talk about Jesus with everyone I meet, Ben Shapiro would understand that. You should understand that about Christians is we want to talk about Jesus. Everyone should understand that about Christian. When you choose to work with a Christian, you're choosing to work with someone for whom Jesus is everything.
By the way, he
keeps choosing to work with Christians.
Look, I have no knowledge of this. I haven't spoken to Matt about this, and I've never met Ben Shapiro. But it seems to me the conversation's already underway. If Ben Shapiro hired Matt Frad, surely he has to know, and he's hired these other Catholics, surely he has to know this conversation's coming. It's probably already underway.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was going to say the other thing that is really tied up with all of this, although on paper it's distinct, is you have people who are worried that they're going to that Matt is not going to be a strong voice on anything related to Israel. And I think in a lot of ways this is something of a proxy over the whole conversation we've just had. Is he going to not be distinctively Christian anymore, not distinctively Catholic? He's going to, you know, kind of toe the line of just whatever Ben Shapiro says, based on Ben Shapiro is a strong supporter of Israel and was a strong supporter of Israel in his fight against Palestine. And Frad was much more nuanced I think called out bad things that had happened on both sides of that equation.
Knowles is becoming more and increasingly more and more a critic of the state of Israel, of their policies.
Right. I think there is an unfair stereotype that the Daily Wire guys are just in lockstep on Israel and worse, are in lockstep because of like the control of some shadowy Jewish cabal or Ben Shapiro.
I think all of that is just kind of untrue. There seems to be some underlying, if you work with a Jew, you're going to get all Jewy. And that seems to me really deeply offensive. There seems to be this, I don't mean it as an opinion. I mean it as an attitude. Like, I think the things that we've seen this year in 2025, it's horrifying the killing of Jews on Bondi Beach or the there's real consequences to anti-Semitism. This is no joke. But particularly Muslim anti-Semitism, I must say. But Christians are why do we want to imitate Muslims in this? Why do we want to be like, oh yeah, we want to get in on that anti-Jew thing too? That bothers me is the attitude that's under a lot of the commentary about Matt Frad. And Matt Frad made fun of it in a little video he made where he wore a yarmulke.
It was very clever.
But there's nothing to fear with Jews. There's nothing to fear with working with Jews. There's nothing to fear. Like, stop it. That's the way I feel about that. Like, I agree with you about evangelization, but I'm worried about that the person who's, especially these young people who are being anti-Semitized by the internet. Stop it.
I don't disagree with a single thing you've said. I agree with it. I am concerned that people will refrain from criticizing the war in Gaza, for example, or the policies of the state of Israel out of a fear of being labeled anti-Semitic.
Yeah, that's a trap. I do think I see that. There's a trap there where you want to be able to say, look, you blew up churches for no reason.
Tens of thousands of women and children dead.
And those are legitimate criticisms of the state of Israel.
There are two very loud voices that are like, Israel is special and unique, and they're the problem of all the world. And then there's another voice that says, Israel is special and unique, and you just can't criticize anything they say.
Yeah, right.
And
but
Israel
is a normal
like,
country.
Neither of these views is...
is Catholic.
Is, yeah, remotely true.
Right.
Israel, like all countries, has done some horrible things, and those horrible things should be called out without equivocation. But that doesn't mean we have to, you know, go into anti-Semitic tropes or any of these things. You can just say... yeah, this country acted in ways that were cruel and indefensible, and also some other people did some pretty cruel and indefensible things to them, and also, you know, every other country you want to look at, you can tell that same story. But if you only look at the negative things any one group does, yeah, you can build a case against anybody, anywhere you want.
All right, I'm glad we got into that. The music is playing, so we will continue with the big Catholic stories of the year. They've all kind of been organized under this heading that Bender gave me, which is that Catholics won the internet. But if we're going to talk about big Catholic stories, we are going to have to talk about a death and an election. I'll leave it to you, dear listener. Try to guess which death and which election we're going to talk about dominated the Catholic world this year.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers. And now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
What is the Catholic Church? Everyone seems to have an opinion, but the church never quite fits into the boxes people make for it. In The Faith Unboxed, author Andrew Petiprin looks at some of the most common boxes people put the Catholic Church in and explains why they don't fit. In doing so, he brings us closer to what the Church really is, the institution founded by Christ. Order The Faith Unboxed today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Just to give you a sense of what it's like to work with the flannel panel, Joe Heschmeyer and Chris Check. We're on that break for like 90 seconds, and here's how the conversation went. We started, by the end of it, trying to solve the Falkland Islands conflict of the 1980s. it's hard to keep us on track. It's hard to keep us
year
on
track. Year in review, 1980, whatever.
Yeah, right. Argentina made a mistake,
86?
By the way. I think we all agree Argentina made a mistake.
86?
Yeah. Was it 86? Well, you're good if you can remember.
82, it looks like.
82? I wouldn't have thought. Really? 82 was the Falkland Islands War? Wow. But we solved it here in 90 seconds. all right, so Catholicism became cool again. Before I get to the death and the election that I was talking about, we actually had an article in the New York Times this year with the question headline, "How did Catholicism become cool again?" So something did happen.
Was it cool before?
Did you? Yeah. Like when was it cool? Yeah. When was it ever cool to be Catholic?
I was country when country wasn't cool.
Something definitely happened. We had tremendous numbers of adults coming into the church. And now I say tremendous numbers. We still lose more adults than we gain here in the United States.
It's actually, it's a little trickier than that.
Okay.
When you look at the numbers, we have lost more than we've gained, which is a different statement.
Sure.
Because some of those are losses. So it's not year to year. It's saying when you ask adults, are they more likely to say they've entered the Catholic Church or left it? They're way more likely to say they've left it. But if you say, look at just 2025, how many people are walking out the doors, how many people are walking in the doors, the situation seems a little more dynamic.
Okay, so you think we might be doing better? Because certainly, yeah, because of the massive hemorrhaging of Catholics for the 50 years before 2025.
Right.
If you just do a general canvassing of the public and say, are you somebody who entered or somebody who exited, we'd have to go 50 great years in order to meet the numbers of exit.
Right. And so what we've seen is that there was a long year after year, decade after decade, decline in religiosity. And this was well established. I mean, this was true across the board, but there was a particular problem within the Catholic Church of just a sort of mass exodus. And then somewhere around 2020 or so, the decline stopped. That's not a huge revival, but the numbers are going down, 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 down. And then it sort of stops going down. And then it starts to creep up a little bit. And so now we find people reporting that they're more religious. We find people saying they're more likely to go to church. We find numbers of people in church going up. And given the sort of apocalyptic scenarios I was hearing during this same period about how with the COVID shutdown in churches, like this is going to be the end of the church in America because once people stop going, they're never going to come back. We're actually seeing an upward trajectory. Now, that upward trajectory has not made up all of the losses we had 2019-2020 of, you know, people who did stop going to church and didn't start coming back again. And because the oldest generation of Americans are the ones most likely to go to church, when a lot of old people stopped going and then didn't start coming back again, those numbers are hard to make up.
Yeah.
But if you look just at younger people in the last few years, in spite of all the other things that are going on, there we do see in the numbers that there is something going on where it shows an increased awareness of and draw towards religion generally and Catholicism specifically.
Most interesting to me about these data that Joe is talking about is regional differences.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, I just think that, for example, in Lincoln, Nebraska, where our friend Bishop Connolly has been the ordinary for some time now, there are a lot of vocations and places like Columbus, Ohio, for example. Whereas here in San Diego, I think Joe, you did some homework on this by diocese. We have the fewest number of young men in the seminary in the United States here in San Diego. So correct me if I'm wrong. So if revitalization takes place, I think we will see kind of evidence of, you know, more and more people watching Catholic Answers Live or whatever it is on the internet, as you're talking about. But to me, the very interesting thing is, where are going to be the parts of the country and the world where family life, Catholic family life, starts to flourish again?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
So building on what Chris is saying, like if you just map out, so the, I believe it was Catholic World Report, did a fruitfulness survey. And what they were looking at is per capita, right? What is your percentage or per capita rate rather of diocesan seminarians, of Catholic weddings, of infant baptisms, of, non-infants being received into the church.
This is not going to go well for San Diego, I can tell you right
now. No, San Diego overall was, of the 175 dioceses in the U.S., they were ranked 171st. So
hey, we're not last.
No,
so
Brownsville,
you're saying there's a chance.
Was last. Brownsville, El Paso, Norwich, and Las Vegas were the ones who had worse performance. Now, I want to give a little bit of credit to the fact that if you're a border diocese and you have a lot of people coming in the diocese, that's going to throw your per capita numbers off. If you've not really had a chance to catechize and form, and then you have a bunch of people crossing the border, entering the diocese, needing the services of the church, not entering seminary, not getting married, on paper, you're going to see a lot of problems there. So that
particular data, Joe, speaks to an interesting or suggests an interesting conclusion with respect to the level of catechesis in the country of Mexico and in Latin America more broadly. And it has been for several generations now.
A disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has. We've suffered quite a few disasters in the Catholic Church. And it does seem to me that there are distinct lines that continue in the church about how to respond to the disasters. I mean, the sexual revolution was a disaster for the church. The reception of, not the execution of, but the reception of the Second Vatican Council was a disaster. Certainly the sex abuse stuff was an utter disaster for the church. But it seems to me that we haven't settled on this is how we're going to go forward with this. And it does seem to me that Pope Francis was a disruptive force in that. It seemed to me that Pope John Paul and Pope, and disruptive is not a good word or a bad word. It's just a fact. So it seemed to me that John Paul was setting a certain direction. It seemed to me Benedict was continuing that direction and adding a kind of his intellectual heft to the leadership of the church to continue in that direction. And then Francis said, no, we're going a completely different direction.
In the case of Mexico, and I don't mean to derail, but isn't that kind of what we do on this?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Want to talk about the Falkland Islands?
in the case of Mexico, it's in the 90s, coinciding about the time when Benedict or John Paul is canonizing and beatifying martyrs of the Cristero War, for example, that the penal codes are being changed. And you see clerics wearing their clerical clothing in public, and there is something of revitalization of the church in Mexico. But I do think that has not proceeded well since then. But this is an interesting thing, and then I apologize. I gave a talk last week for the Institute for Catholic Culture on Cortez to Our Lady of Guadalupe, and I had a very good question from a woman. She observed something with respect to Mexico. The Guadalupe Shrine in Mexico is the most visited Catholic shrine in the world by millions. Yeah. And the next one is Rome, and then Fatima, I think. But by millions more. And yet there is and Our Lady, when she appears to Juan Diego, says, "I want to tell the world about my son." She's very explicit. That's what she wants to do. "I want the world to know about my son." And yet, Our Lady of Guadalupe, in some ways, has eclipsed her son in the popular sentiment in Mexico.
Yes, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. There's more coming.
Yeah, but that does seem to me that even when you go back to, I think it was around the year 2000 with the letter Dominus Jesus from Ratzinger, but endorsed by Pope John Paul. It does seem to me that if you wanted to trace a trajectory that John Paul and Benedict had the church on, it was go back to the proclamation of the person of Jesus, and that it was very, very. If you want to talk about resourcement, that it seems to me that these two had this idea of it. It is the proclamation of the person of Jesus that's going to be the relevant thing, and this comes from the Second Vatican Council, from Lumen Gentium. Lumen Gentium, the first words of the document are, "Christ is the light of nations." This is what we are here to do: is to proclaim Christ as the light of nations. When I see what happened with Pope Francis, there's a radical disruption there, and I think a confusion that comes in. And I'm not. I honestly, I know that this will sound like I'm judging Pope Francis. Disruption can be good or bad. I don't know the outcome of it, but I wonder if Pope Leo's task isn't to somehow integrate the Franciscan with the John Paulian and find a way forward that the church will not lose its. I don't think Francis was against Jesus. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it was confusing to people. What is the course that he's setting for the church?
And you had a whole cadre of people who presented themselves as sort of the interpreter of Pope Francis for American life, or
most
the interpreter
of
Pope Francis for. And a lot of it was kind of, they were just saying, "Oh no, trust me, my own theological agenda is totally what the Pope says. And if you disagree with me, you don't like the Pope.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see kind of what those people are going to do now, because Pope Leo, you don't have people wondering, what did he mean by that in the same way? So I think there was certainly a sense. I'm reminded of St. Paul in 1 Corinthians 14, where he says, if the bugle gives an indistinct sound, who will get ready for battle? That there is that sense that I think a lot of bishops weren't sure what direction the Holy Father wanted them to go. And it maybe led to a little more
freelancing,
confusion, inaction, ambiguity.
The truth is, though, that the Benedict and the John Paul effect, with respect to seminarians especially, is still well underway. The work the Catholic University, I know we've talked about it on this show before, the work the Catholic University has done on the, how can we say, the perspective of seminarians or where they are on the political spectrum. And I don't like those adjectives, but, you know, we use them. They are increasingly larger and larger percentage of them conservative. And the ones that, who are not are retiring or dying.
Okay.
If I may, I wanted to return to something real quick.
Go ahead, Joe.
Because
I was trying to set you up there, Joe.
Okay, wonderful. Well,
are you going to try to sell one of your books right now, Joe?
No, is that what you're Christian doing? Smith's book, Young Catholic America, Emerging Adults in, Out of, and Gone from the Church. This book's a little older. It's early 2010s, I believe, 2012, 2013. But it looks at the rates of first, second, and third generation Hispanic immigrants to the U.S. compared to their white Catholic counterparts. And looks at, you know, how likely are they to receive confirmation, receive First Communion, go to confession. And even though there are definitely catechetical problems that I think Chris rightly points out, the immigrants to the U.S. have more kind of hallmarks of devotional life. You know, they're more likely to go to confession. They're more likely to go on pilgrimage. They're more likely to pray the rosary. They're more likely to have religious images in their home, way more likely to receive First Communion. They're actually slightly less likely to have been confirmed. So what you have there is clearly people with some affiliation to the faith, but it also seems like we're not doing a great job of doing anything with that because their kids and their grandkids look much more like their secular American peers than they do like their parents.
I think that affiliation is largely cultural.
Well, I think that's part of, I mean, a lot of what you have is
not
you've
religious.
Got a culture where people are doing things, going to confession and the like.
Confession, I'm suspicious of.
Why?
Go on.
Why are you suspicious?
I'm just suspicious of the number because baptism and First Holy Communion are big public celebrations.
Yeah.
Confession's not. And, I mean, you should. You should celebrate. I can't dispute the numbers that you're sharing there, Joe, but it would surprise me.
I would even back it up anecdotally. Like, people I've known from Mexico were, in my experience, way more likely to either go to confession on Saturday or not go to communion if they hadn't been to confession on the prior day.
Everybody in the confession line at my church is Mexican.
So you'd have a lot of people doing sinful things, but... Like, you also had more of a sense of this is something I need to go to confession for.
We got to take the break, but when we come back, okay, so did Catholics win the internet this year? Our evidence thus far, Carlo Acutis, the new saint for the internet, Matt Frad joined the Daily Wire. Catholicism, according to the media, including the New York Times, became cool again this year. This is what I'd like to hit when we come back. I think we need to talk about Catholic Answer's role in this. It's bigger than people think. And I'm going to give you my evidence for that and get your comments right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with a gospel message. EWTN is everywhere on social media platforms, including Audible, iHeart, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and X. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm about to toot our own horn here at Catholic Answers. We're doing the year in review for the year 2025, and the Catholic year in review. Actually, maybe more than in recent years, has included good news for the Catholic Church. Quite a good news year. I've already done this with Chris and Joe before, but I attribute most of that to the fact that we had a Eucharistic Congress here in the United States. I believe there's nothing more powerful than Christ in the Eucharist. As a matter of fact, that is the King of the universe come to be with us. And so I think the Eucharistic Congress has a big part of that. But I would like to say something about Catholic Answers as an institution founded by Carl Keating and built by people like Jimmy Akin and now I'm forgetting everybody's name. I panicked.
Tim Staples.
No, but even before that, Father Ryland's time, Patrick Madrid. I couldn't get Patrick Madrid's name to come out of my brain.
But Mark Brumley
and Mark Brumley. What we're seeing now, I think, is a lot of we talked before about Protestant ministers complaining about Catholics are so much better prepared on the internet than Protestants are for many of the arguments that are going on, for many of the conversations that are going on. People are discovering the truth of the Catholic Church. If I look at Ascension Press, I see founded by a graduate of Catholic Answers. If I look at Ignatius Press, it's run by a graduate of Catholic Answers. Matt Frad, Jason Evert, on and on and on.
Patrick Madrid.
We mentioned Patrick. I think the effect, the Catholic Answers effect, is resonating. It's doing just exactly what it was meant to do, which what you said is build the forces up, prepare the. It's a force multiplier. It's here to prepare people to go out and proclaim Jesus and the fullness of the truth as given to us in the Catholic Church. I think since you're the president of the Catholic Answers, congratulations, Chris.
We're all conduits here, and if I have had a role in that, I'm glad to have played it. But I do think that your mention of the Protestant frustration with the quality of Catholic apologetics is an important one because, and I talk about this now increasingly with the staff and with people outside the apostolate. More and more Protestants are realizing that, let's take one example. Say you're kind of a low church Pentecostalist and your pastor has just been telling you, well, you keep away from the Catholics, you know, they right. worship statues or whatever it is. Now anybody can look up that charge and see that it's false and actually get a perfectly good response.
I'll tell you what, while you're just talking, I'm going to go to ChatGPT and ask it, do Catholics worship statues? And I'm going to give you, we'll see what how easy this is to debunk, but go ahead.
Right. But then even if you want to get into the more sophisticated Protestant theologies of, say, Martin Luther or John Calvin, for example, Sola Scriptura, I think, is pretty easy to dispatch. Sola Fide takes a little bit longer, I think, but again, anyone who wants to dig into these answers, and this, by the way, you know, I keep thinking of that guy, Jeremy Christensen, I think his name is, who wrote the book about leaving the Mormon church.
Oh, yeah.
And his comment to you about the worst thing that happened to the Mormon church was the internet. But that also is now going to be true of all the Protestant churches. Anyone who seriously wants to look something up can find a charitable and compelling answer.
Catholics worship statues, your pastor told you. Now all you do is just type in, do Catholics worship statues? That's the exact sentence I typed into ChatGPT. Short answer, no. Catholics do not worship statues. Worship is given to God alone. Statues are reminders, not gods. There are different kinds of honor in the Catholic Church. Latria, dulia, hyperdulia. Kneeling and candles and prayer looks like worship, but don't always signify worship. It's as easy as that now to find out the truth. And that wasn't, I didn't ask, now, probably ChatGPT stole all of that intellectual property from Catholic.com. Yes. But God bless them, steal more if that's what the kind of things, that I challenge any Protestant. Type in your question about the Catholic faith.
See what ChatGPT says, because I think the best friend of the Catholic faith is the internet.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you can also go to Catholic.com. You can look up your questions.
But I don't
there
know if everyone would. I think people will see that as bias. You know, if you're like Chris said, a low church Pentecostal Christian, I'm saying go to a neutral site and find out.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm just saying there's something kind of strange about that. I get it. I get where you're coming from completely, and I think that's a very valid thing. You can just say neutrally, but it is weird to say, "Hey, what does Cy believe?" And it'd be like, "Well, I can't ask Cy; he's biased." I got to ask somebody else about what
that's a good point. Yes, right. That's a good point.
I think Catholic Answers' big opportunity in the coming year and in the years to follow is going to be with the evangelical churches, because those do have a kind of a fervor still, and they are having children and they are growing, and they seem to have an active, energetic faith life. I think those who are open to having their theology examined are gonna find their way into the Catholic Church. The other Protestant churches, you know, the Methodists, the Episcopalians, they're just imploding. They have fewer numbers every year.
It's sad how many have given up on Christianity.
Right,
whole churches no longer believe the Christian faith. That's sad.
There are a handful of issues that are quite predictably just dividing these denominations in ways that are causing outright schisms. You know, the Church of England elects a pro-choice woman as the Archbishop of Canterbury, and it becomes so transparent to anyone with eyes. Like, that's not what an archbishop looks like or believes or is. Like, that's whatever you want to call this woman, you can call her whatever.
Oh, we lost you.
Oh, that's because Satan didn't like what he was saying. That's what we say around here. When Satan gets mad at Joe, he just cuts him off. And Joe is talking to himself. He thought he thought we were listening to him, but you got cut off, Joe.
Yeah, it said hold. I got a weird message I'd never gotten before saying, "Hold on, you can call into the."
Really?
With this number.
Maybe ChatGPT got mad at you for your comments regarding ChatGPT. Don't do that, Joe. Don't speak. So go ahead. You were saying about.
I was starting to say, or I don't know exactly where I was in this, that there are a predictable set of issues. You know, your beliefs about sexual activity between people of the same sex or unmarried people, your belief about women being priests and bishops and all of this that are dividing a number of Protestant denominations as we speak. The Dutch Reformed in the U.S. and Canada are going through a schism where a new denomination is forming, a more liberal one. Usually the conservatives are the ones breaking away. This time it's the more liberal members breaking away to form their own denomination. But it's a huge schism. The Anglicans are having a global schism where a majority of the world's Anglicans, it looks like, are no longer going to be in union with England. I mean, the whole point of being Anglican, it's right there in the name, is that you're part of the Church of England.
Right.
And so it was never meant to be a global church. It was only meant to be the Church of England and her colonies. And now it's become this kind of global phenomenon in the English-speaking world where it's causing this massive schism because the Archbishop of Canterbury, allegedly, is a pro-choice woman. And even people who've gone along with women's ordination to the priesthood maybe say, well, you can't become a bishop. I don't know why they draw the line there. And certainly say the things she believes on all these issues are just not Christian beliefs. And so you're finding these schisms within large Protestant denominations. And the more the Catholic Church just speaks sanity and clearly and charitably,
and remains
and
remains unified.
That's important, Chris, isn't it?
The endless fracturing. I ask my Protestant brothers and sisters, when you observe that, does that not give you pause, this endless fracturing?
Well, I have to say there's a kind of caricature of Pope Francis that is actually being lived out in the German church in many ways, that people said that's what Francis is. But even Francis looked at that and went, are you kidding me? Why do we need another Protestant church?
Yes.
Stay Catholic.
He said we already had one German Reformation.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things that we hear when people comment on our apologists is intellectual rigor, but not a sense of they're trying to just win an argument. Genuine compassion and love for people. That to me is the winning combination. If we can somehow make that our tone every day, I think we will welcome a lot of new people into the church. The Catholic Church won the internet in 2025. I say I proved my case. I don't know how these other two, but we're going to move on. Second hour, I'm going to give you the top six news stories of 2026, and I'm going to get your, of 2025. I can't predict 2026.
Oh, let's do 2026. Okay, that'll be a lot more fun.
Yeah, the top six news stories of we're going to do 2025. When we come back, we'll do the news of the world from a Catholic perspective and review the year with the flannel panel on Catholic Answers Live.